You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
Houston, we have a problem. So last night I was complaining that I think I've got Dana's rash with the cheetah reader.
With the eyeglasses.
Let's rephrase that.
Yeah.
No. My
what?
Allergy has transferred. You know how when some women for a long time live in the same home, cyclically, they tend to merge. Biologically, yeah. Women will tend to merge.
They'll get on the same cycle
biologically,
schedule, if you will.
Things sync up.
Yeah. Scott and I have been in this room together for so long, coming up on the 14th year, by the way.
That is correct.
That my bizarre medical issues and allergies are starting to jump the plexiglass and land on him on the other side of the studio.
Much better phrasing.
Dare I say he might be headed for menopause.
Well, we never know.
Oh,
so anyway,
menopause.
She has had a rash because of the plastic in her cheetah readers.
Yeah. Contact dermatitis.
And yeah. And so I have started to develop a rash behind my right ear.
Mm-hmm.
So today I brought in some glasses that T just has laying around the house. I don't know what her problem is, but T's got like 8 cheetah readers just laying around the house.
Everybody does.
One in every room.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I grabbed this maroon pair today that I thought was pretty good.
Quite fashionable.
And I wear a cheetah reader. Thank you, Dan. I wear a cheetah reader of 1.25.
Mm-hmm.
I think these cheetah readers are 1.00.
Mm.
And so I can't read as well as I would like. And I know I sound old.
Oh, it's going to be a wild ride today.
Sound.
Okay. Younger than you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, true.
Mustache bar. By the way, looks very fashionable.
Thank you.
But
thank
I wouldn't
you.
Let it go any farther.
No?
No, I think right where you are.
Right about there.
Yeah.
I will
yeah,
say, Scott, that you do look more like a librarian than you did yesterday.
Okay.
And how are they with the itching? Are they causing more contact dermatitis?
No itching.
Okay.
But I can't see as well. So I think I need to go to CVS tonight. Anyway.
You should.
I have to look into that.
Purchased the $9 invention. Someone stole my invention, by the way. Patent pending. Went on Amazon.
It's not pending anymore.
And I got one, and I'm going to wear it for a week, Scott. It goes over the part that makes you allergic above your ears. It's mm-hmm. just a little nylon piece, sleeve that goes over it. It arrives tomorrow. I'm going to bring it. And if it works and my rash goes away, I will buy you one.
Well, thank
because
you.
I feel like I'm responsible for your rash.
I believe you are.
What's this little sleeve that goes over the arm made of?
Nylon, I think.
Hmm.
Now, the croquis that I was talking about yesterday, those are cotton.
Okay.
So there should be no issues.
Better than plastic.
You're also allergic to cotton.
All right. So Israel, we cannot ignore the big news story of the day. Israel and Hamas have apparently reached a deal to stop the fighting in the Gaza Strip and free more than a third of the Israeli hostages who have had to endure more than 15 months of captivity. I can still remember when this, I was in the clink when October 7th occurred in 2023. So what they've agreed to is like a 42-day ceasefire, the way I understand it. Hamas will release 33 hostages. It is believed, according to Fox News, and I was watching them earlier, that 10 of the 33 are not alive. So 23 alive hostages, 10 hostages who are dead. And the 23 who are alive are apparently in very bad condition. It is also believed that there are only 60 of the 97 hostages still alive, including 3 Americans. Okay, not everybody chime in at once. Israel has agreed to release much more than that in prisoners that they are holding from Gaza.
I hope it sticks.
Freeing hundreds of Palestinians imprisoned in jail. So in exchange for 33 hostages, Israel's giving up hundreds of Palestinians who are in jail.
I hope it sticks.
So
the
do I.
Current president has noted that the ceasefire and hostage deal will, quote, bring permanent end of the war. The incoming president calls it an epic ceasefire and hostage deal. And while I think you know, it is progress moving forward. When I read permanent end of war.
How many
permanent
times
end of this war?
Yeah. However, that's right. That's right.
God.
However,
how many
Hamas
hundreds of years does this go back, Dan?
Oh, just about 150. Yep.
The fighting in that area?
Yes. Hamas has been decimated as a force.
Gaza's been decimated.
Strip. Yeah.
True. Hamas has been decimated along with Hezbollah up in Lebanon. And Iran has certainly taken multiple body blows mm-hmm. and black eyes from all that has occurred in the past months. And we may possibly see an end to hostilities for a time.
I have a question.
Because of all of that.
And we are not looking to make this a topic.
No, we are not.
But someone very close to me has a roommate who very strongly believes one side for familial reasons. And multiple other people close to me have people in their lives who very strongly believe
the other side.
The other side. And I said to one of them, you know, a year ago, 8 months ago, I said, don't say a word. Stay out of it.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot possibly understand. You know, there are scholars who have studied this their entire careers,
right,
where, you know, this is just something you don't want to step in the middle of. Don't try. Don't. There's no yeah, but, or what if, or what, you know, I tried after the attack to explain what happened. And I said, that being said, you are on college campuses. There are going to be people who very strongly believe this or that. And I don't remember the last time I told children to, I don't want to say remain ignorant, but to stay out of it. What? Because nothing good can come with your limited, extremely limited understanding of how far this goes back, getting into some sort of argument with someone who passionately believes one side or the other.
But there's a difference between remaining ignorant and remaining silent.
Correct.
I mean, people have lost jobs over Facebook sharing their views on this conflict over the last 15 months.
Yeah, I would suggest to inform yourself as much as you wish.
I sent a timeline. I sent a timeline is what I did. I think the New York Times had a timeline going all the way back. And I said, here's the timeline. If you want to educate yourself, outside of that, don't say a word.
Well, do not engage.
But,
yeah.
But you have to keep in mind, this conflict does not start in 1947. This conflict goes back thousands of years.
Millennia.
Come on.
Now, the region, the Levant, has been fought over and conquered and lost and conquered and fought over since the dawn of time because it is a crossroads
uh-huh.
for humanity going between three continents. And it's been fought over quite a lot. The modern
and three major religions, Dan,
really only goes back roughly 100 years or so.
But we've all been in a situation, and I told you this in the newsroom yesterday, I think Dan and Sam heard this, where I accidentally received a DM from a friend of mine that I've worked with for years.
Oh, I heard this too.
And I don't believe he meant to send it, and I'm not going to say which side it was on, but it was not a good comment.
A little inflammatory?
It was very inflammatory, and I just didn't respond. And because there's, what do you say other than we should all be against the mass slaughter
yeah.
over any ideology or religion? I'm against all of that. That being said, I don't want to get into any conversation with someone who feels deeply and personally one way or the
well,
other.
Because you can't win.
There is zero winning.
Yeah. I mean, it's like arguing over abortion or politics or guns. You're not going to
change someone's mind.
Right. And if the goal of entering into conversation,
especially generational minds right. with and, respect to this
and,
conflict.
And so if the goal of entering into a debate is to open someone's mind to the possibility that they may be wrong or that there is another side that has credence, You can't do that with this conflict.
You could be a doctorate level historian whose focus of study was specifically this region and provide any and every detail possible from the last however many thousands of years, however mm-hmm. many hundreds of years, whichever specific conflict you'd like to key on, and still not change the opinion of the opposing thought process.
That is correct.
Phones are ringing. We will not be taking calls on this.
We will not. And I will not be giving out the phone number here in just a moment.
We are not going to do it. We are a news station. We mentioned the developments, and we are moving on to the topics here of the day.
Dan Weinbaum, Sam Stevie III, Dana Wright. My name is Scott Parks here on KMBZ. Story here from the CBS affiliate in Detroit. The attorney for Jennifer Crumbly, the mother of the Oxford High School shooter, is now alleging that the Oakland County Prosecutor's Office conducted a smear campaign against her, including spending at least $100,000 to retain two high-priced PR firms. According to the court documents that were filed Monday, check that, attorney Michael Desi claims that prosecutors hired two firms. One was called Identity, the other was Moment Strategies LLC, to push a narrative after the shooting. Crumbly and her husband James were convicted last year of involuntary manslaughter in connection with the November 2021 shooting that killed four Oxford High School students and left six other students and a teacher injured. In the month following her conviction, Jennifer Crumbly filed a motion requesting a new trial charges dropped. Okay, fine. Desi, the attorney, her attorney, who was appointed as Jennifer Crumbly's appellate attorney, also alleges that despite gag orders, prosecutors allowed a Washington Post reporter to have behind-the-scenes access and also had an agreement with ABC News to produce a documentary.
I'm extremely concerned.
What are you ooing in there?
That this could be grounds for a mistrial. The documentary, by the way, Sins of the Parents, The Crumbly Trials, aired back in April, a week after they were sentenced.
And you said that the prosecutor hired or took the deal from the documentary team.
That is what she is alleging through her attorney.
That's what I am ooing.
Keep in mind, those transactions, those contracts between a prosecutor's office and Hollywood are going to be public record. This is not a journalist with a source. If they hired a film crew to come in
and use taxpayer money
for that, any of the, you know, back and forth about logistics, about what they were willing to share, all of that is going to be public record. And why hire a PR firm to smear two parents who clearly were awful people? You know, this wasn't like, man, we don't know the way the jury is going to go on this. There's not a lot of evidence. You know, we need to really hire a PR firm to get our story out there on the part of the government. They were so guilty, Scott. You remember this is the case where she sent a text to the school shooter, her son, and said, you need to be more careful about getting caught.
But you also have to remember this was the first time ever in American prosecutorial history that the parents of a school shooter were being brought up on charges. Now, the question has to be asked, if they hired a high-level PR firm, actually two, how is this not tainting the jury?
Wouldn't it be directly that?
Wouldn't that be the point?
Yeah. Why else would you hire a PR firm? And it sounds to me, and you just noted that this is the first case of its kind, that they were parading around, we're going to stick it to the parents and we're going to be the first ones to do it before the trial even happened.
Yes, but let me play devil's advocate here and not in a very good way with respect to how this is going to make the prosecutor's office look. But there are cases over the years, JonBenet Ramsey is one of them, where the district attorney and Boulder Police Department didn't necessarily hire a PR firm to make the family look bad. What they did was they leaked
right,
and very selectively leaked falsehoods to further the narrative at the time that they believed the father killed that child. Is there any difference between the two, except the contract and the money exchanged for a film crew. Prosecutors' offices and police departments have been selectively leaking information to the media since the beginning of media.
Yeah, but when you hire two high-profile PR firms, now it becomes an orchestrated outside of the office, if you will, campaign to make them look bad, to taint the jury, to ensure that on this first of all kind prosecution, you get the verdict that you want.
Here's the prosecutor's statement on this. The two stories that defense counsel references came out after the jury verdicts, not before. Mm-hmm. So the suggestion that those films had any impact on the jury, quote, is ridiculous.
That's fine. You're right. The documentary came out a week after the verdict. But does that not affect the appellate process for Jennifer Crumbly?
It would affect the appellate process, sure.
Okay.
If you've seen the documentary, and locally, my guess is those numbers were very high with respect to the viewership of that
right.
documentary. Maybe not across the country, but there, you better believe everybody tuned in.
Now, in fairness, the Menendez brothers, 35 years incarcerated, you could make the argument that the movie Monster and the documentary that came out, I believe, on Netflix, if I'm not mistaken, did that not influence the prosecution, the public sentiment toward the Menendez brothers' case, people pushing on the prosecutor at the time? Gascon?
Sure it did. But there is complete plausible, say, deniability because they shot Mom and Dad. But there's a reason they shot Mom and Dad. And if that testimony had been allowed, I don't believe they would be in prison. Make this about the OJ case. What if it came out that the prosecution back then hired two high-profile PR firms to push the narrative that O.J. Simpson murdered his wife? What would we have said about that then?
That they were trying to taint the jury.
Didn't work.
And I think it's different.
No, but you have to keep in mind the times.
I think it's different because of the way that this happened allegedly prior to the trial. Whereas with the Menendez case, this is a discussion about freeing them after the trial.
35 years post.
Correct.
I just feel like of all cases where you would hire a PR firm, not a good idea, but of all cases, if you were going to, why this one? He shot and killed five people.
Because the prosecution was taking a risk. They were doing something that had never been done before, charging the parents of a school shooter with being reckless. In fact, not just being reckless, charging them with involuntary manslaughter. If I'm not mistaken, Jennifer Crumbly is in prison for the next 10 to 15 years. And I'm going off memory there. But this had never been done before. I mean, with the Columbine shooters, the argument could be made, and I think successfully, that the parents of Klebold and Harris should have known that there were guns in their kids' closet, that the kids were writing weird things, and they just ignored it.
They were sentenced to 10 to 15 years, both parents.
Yeah. I mean, if the mother of the Sandy Hook killer had survived, you could strongly make the argument that she should have been prosecuted. The only problem there is he killed her first.
Well, and we saw the story at Newport News, Virginia, if I remember correctly, with the kindergartner who shot his teacher. They found a way to charge the mom. It wasn't directly related to the shooting, but because she was in possession of a firearm and lied on a form about drug use.
913-586-7798, 913-586-7798, here on Dana and Parks. So we're talking about this story regarding Jennifer Crumbly. You may recall she is the mom of the teenager who shot up his school in Oxford County, Michigan, back in 2021. And she, through her attorney, is alleging to the appellate court that the district attorney in Oxford County hired two high-profile PR firms to smear her before her case went to trial.
Now, the text line presented a potentially legitimate reason for a prosecutor to hire a PR firm in such a high-profile case, and that is to train anyone and everyone on staff who may be speaking about this in any sort of public capacity how to talk about these trials so that you don't get in the way out of justice, per se.
Or the DA tells the assistant DAs, keep your mouth shut.
Right. I think that's a stretch. What was the case a few weeks ago, Sam, where you were saying, oh my gosh, the prosecutor just laid out their entire case on camera for the world to see?
I believe that was the Luigi Mangione case where he rolled out every single detail that they were going to use.
That prosecutor loves the camera. Mm-hmm. So I will just ask you, if it's so bad to hire the PR firm to facilitate those interviews, is there really any difference between that and what we see other prosecutors drawn to that camera light do in cases all over the country all the time, where I stand here before you today, now they're innocent until proven guilty. That being said,
they
start spewing all the details of how they're going to attack that case. Is there really any difference?
Oh, the case that we were talking about a couple of weeks ago, the hammer had already fallen in the way that he was talking.
Joe in Olathe. Joe, good afternoon. Hello.
Hey, guys. So, this is scary if that's true, because the government already has unlimited pockets to come after you for whatever they believe you committed. And for them to be able to hire a PR firm to make you look bad, it's scary. That's the most scary thing in a trial that I could ever think of.
Well, the argument would be, Joe, that she and her husband, James, already did look bad. Why did you need a PR firm?
Well, I agree, but the defense doesn't have the ability, especially if she had a federal or a public defender, to buy a PR firm to claim she was innocent and they're just being railroaded by the government. I mean, that's the I think if this went up higher level, this is going to be found unconstitutional, and that this prosecutor, in my opinion, should be charged for. That is at the minimal ethic violations.
If these allegations are true, I don't know how you don't throw this case out and overturn the conviction.
It certainly doesn't look good, and the prosecutor's office is going to have a very difficult time trying to legitimize why they forked over $100,000 to a couple of PR firms.
PR firms. Why did you even need... why did you need one, but why did you need two?
And to Joe's point, when you're going up against something like this, and of course we're not defending the person involved in the trial,
you're
going up against something like this, you've already got all of the cards stacked against you. Mm-hmm. When you hire two big-name PR firms, all of a sudden there's two decks of cards stacked against you.
And when you start texting the guilty party in the aftermath of the shooting, come on.
Do a better job of covering your tracks.
I don't want to say it was open and shut, because I understand the historic nature of the case, but they are horribly guilty.
913-586-7798. Sherry in Kansas City. Sherry, hello.
Hi, how are you guys doing today?
We're doing well, thank you.
It's a little bit off topic, but I just have a random thought of, in this setting a precedence of prosecuting parents of the school shooters, a couple of thoughts. The first being, you know, at what point is there a cutoff on that? Like, if their quote-unquote child is 18 but still in school, do they prosecute or do they not, because it's an adult child? And the second is, do you think that they believe that this could be some kind of a deterrent to these school shooters of, I better rethink this because mom and dad could end up in trouble if I do it? And I just was curious on what your thoughts were on that.
I don't think it would be a deterrent to the school shooter. I do think it could potentially be a deterrent to parents who have guns in the home.
I agree, because we are starting to see those dominoes fall with respect to charging mom and dad. There will be other cases.
Well, I think there's been another case, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. It just hasn't been adjudicated yet.
But don't want jail time, lock your guns up.
Yeah, which is exactly right. I mean, there are three guns in my house. And Sarah is 23 years old, extremely responsible, level-headed, the apple of my eye. When she comes over for Pancake Friday, I lock up every gun in the house. I don't think she's going to grab a gun. I don't think she would do anything with a gun. I'm not going to be held responsible. God forbid something goes wrong. Now, when there's just me and T in the house, the safe is unlocked. Because if somebody breaks in the middle of the night, I'm not going to go fiddling with a key at 2 in the morning in the dark trying to open up a gun safe.
Was that 2347 or 4723?
Oh, my gosh, I can't remember. So the gun safe is open when I'm in the house. But if anybody other than me or T is in the house, it is locked.
And that is the best practice as a responsible gun owner.
That is correct. Telephone number here is 913-586-7798. Coming up in just a little bit, we're going to bring back a story we ended the show with last night. And that is Starbucks saying they are no longer America's public restroom.
Get out.
No more coming in and just going pee or poo and leaving.
You got to purchase a latte, which will help get things moving along.
Yeah, it will.
Okay. And also, Travis Kelce, you know, we've talked about BMI on this show quite a bit over the years. There's a new story here today from USA Today. Travis Kelce is technically borderline chronically obese.
Oh, give me a break.
So is Jake Gyllenhaal.
He and I are the same height and weight, Travis Kelce, not Jake Gyllenhaal. And I can confirm that I rank as chronic level one obese.
When do we get rid of the BMI?
That's the story in the USA Today.
Bunk.
It's time to get rid of it.
Medical institution. That is what it should stand for. And speaking of Kelce, I don't know if this is a meme. I don't know if this is true, but I laughed out loud after the podcast where he was talking about the Bengals. And he said, I ain't scared of nobody. I will meet them in a Walmart parking lot.
Expletive, expletive, expletive.
Yeah, you're leaving out a lot of F words, but okay.
There is a meme going around that Walmart has posted, say the word, we'll paint the end zones.
Oh, yes, please.
Classic. Say the word.
That is an appropriate use of corporate social media.
Very funny. All right, here's the story about Starbucks. It's from CNN. We wrapped up the program with it last night, but didn't have enough time. Starbucks does not want to be America's public bathroom anymore. Starbucks is scrapping a policy that had let anyone hang out at its cafes or use the restrooms without making a purchase. The new rules are part of a larger effort to improve Starbucks' cafe experience and deter homeless people and non-paying customers who have come to use Starbucks solely for shelter and for restroom access. But they reverse a policy that was put in place after one of the company's biggest ever PR disasters. You may recall it was back in 2018. There was a young black man who was sitting in a Starbucks. He was waiting on a friend in Philadelphia. One of the men said he asked to use the restroom shortly after walking in and was told it was only for paying customers. The incident was caught on camera and morphed into a PR disaster for Starbucks. But Starbucks now says no more just walking in and using our restrooms. They are also getting rid of panhandling, consuming outside alcohol and vaping, and employees will receive training on the new policy.
Were either of those legal prior?
I don't think they were.
Well, okay.
Here's my question. If you work at an establishment that has said, we're not going to be handling your restroom needs anymore, those poor workers are then put in a position where they have to come up to you and say, I'm sorry, are you going to order anything? You can't use our restroom, which then led to, and I do believe that was a misunderstanding, and was it Philly?
Mm-hmm.
That then led to this enormous, awful, looked like racial profiling.
Embarrassing.
Disaster.
For, and the customer held their ground and said, I don't have to go anywhere.
It was just awful. But you're also asking the employees, if we're going to go back and say, okay, now we can't have anyone in here just using the restroom, you're asking those employees to enforce that.
And to monitor. I mean, I don't go into a McDonald's very often, but I've been in a McDonald's before. The bathroom entrance is out of sight of the front counter in most McDonald's.
Yeah.
Are we going to post a McDonald's employee outside of the bathroom?
Here's the other thing. At one of the Starbucks nearest to here, when you walk in one of the doors, you take an immediate left and there's the restroom. You don't even have to go up to the counter to be greeted. there are two entrances. One is right next to the restroom.
I don't think this policy is specifically about whether or not you can come in and use the restroom and leave. I think it's specifically about the people that come in and hang out for 6 to 8 hours.
On their laptops?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the problem that they're running into, because they welcomed people to come in to do that because they wanted the business professional to come in and work on their laptop, buy 3 or 4 different cups of coffee in that 8-hour period.
Yeah.
And what they found in certain areas was that it wasn't the business professional coming in and occupying that homeless cushy chair for 8 hours. It was a homeless person who didn't want to be sitting in the cold for that 8 hours. And now the employee is in an even stickier situation, because good luck getting that person out.
Telephone number is 913-586-7798, 586-7798, here on Dana and Parks. So we're talking about this story from CNN, where Starbucks says it is no longer going to have an open-door policy regarding its restrooms, because they argue people are turning Starbucks into America's restroom. And what is really happening, instead of, to Sam's point in the previous segment, high-end executives sitting there for 3 or 4 hours with their laptop, Starbucks is becoming a hangout for homeless people who don't want to be cold.
We had a caller call in who said that this is more of a CYA from Starbucks, that they're not actually going to expect their employees, their managers, to implement this rule to carry out kicking out somebody who's not spending money. But the next time there is an incident,
right,
that is a PR nightmare,
got it,
they can say, well, we put out the release saying you're not allowed to do this anymore.
Is loitering still a thing? Is there a loitering ordinance on the books where you're not allowed to loiter?
Yes, but don't businesses have to say, or homeowners, not homeowners, but businesses have to say no loitering on the door?
No.
They do not.
You have a full right to kick them out whenever you want to without cause.
913.
It's not a public space.
Okay, 913-586-7798. Steve in Fort Scott. Steve, hello.
Hey, guys. How are you doing today?
We're doing well. Thank you.
Hey, I remember reading an article about a year ago from someone out in California that basically said, I'm never going to Starbucks again because the last time I went into the bathroom, there was a junkie in one stall and someone turning tricks in the other.
Oh.
And when I went up to the counter to tell the employees, they said, well, there's nothing we can do about it. Starbucks policy says anyone can use the bathroom.
Hmm.
Wow.
Boy, have we come full circle here or what? Because before it was, you can use the bathroom. Then it was no one can use the bathroom. Then it was you can, and now it's back to you can't.
Well, there are major cities that they do not allow. You have to pay to go into the public restroom.
Or there's a sign on the door, you know, that says restrooms for paying customers only, or a sign on the door that says no public restrooms.
Correct.
Or like Dollar General, you got to get that giant wooden spoon with the spoon.
That's been going on for years.
And by the way, he was referencing the doing drugs in the bathroom. That is not an uncommon practice for a certain population.
Speaking of sign on the door, we might bring this back, Scott, because you know about all of the businesses that have been broken into. Waldo, Brookside, Crossroads. One of my favorite little coffee shops is in a story in the Kansas City Star today, Hi Hat in Westwood. I love.
Is that cute little on the corner coffee shop?
Oh, my gosh. Been there 100 years. Yeah. Yes.
I know what you're talking
love
about.
Love Hi-Hat, just on the other side of Pembroke, is part of a story where business owners are starting to put these gigantic signs on the front of the business that say, no cash accepted. I mean, gigantic signs. So, and this affects everybody. If you're not a ne'er-do-well, this still will affect you, because there are stores now in Kansas City saying, we are going to a complete electronic transaction method where we will not even accept your cash, so that burglars, when they come to try and break in and rob us, will see the sign, there's no cash here.
So there's nothing to take. Now, for years, there's a myth that's been going around that because American cash is, quote, legal tender.
Right.
That businesses have to accept it.
Nope.
That is not true. From the Federal Reserve Board, there is no federal statute mandating that a private business, a person, or an organization must accept currency or coins as payment.
For 25 of the 26 years that Philip Jensen has owned Hi-Hat, it's been around a lot longer than that, but he's owned it 26 years.
Yep.
The tiny little coffee shop has only been burglarized once. The dark of night, it says, election night in November, a man smashed the shop's glass front door trying to find cash. Finding none, he fled. Then, 5 weeks later, it happened again. Again, they fled, alarm was tripped, nothing to find. It would make sense then if you're a business owner, because of the cost of sweeping up the glass, to go to a cashless system and put a gigantic sign on the door that says, we don't even accept cash. We don't have any fentanyl here. We don't have any K2.
We got some caffeine.
Move along. There's nothing in here but coffee beans.
Right.
And one of the reasons I want to talk about this is we went and had breakfast about 2 weeks ago down from Jasper's. That little, is it Jerry's Cafe? The breakfast place?
I'm not familiar.
And when we got there...
Love Jerry's Cafe, by the way.
There was a gigantic piece of cardboard and a trash bag on the front window. You can tell someone had just smashed their way in the night before. And God bless those employees, Scott. They were still slinging hash and pancakes. And we were so glad that we went. It was a little chilly.
Yeah.
But we were so glad we were there supporting them. Because how much is it to replace, Sam, one of those enormous, heavy, gigantic industrial glass doors?
Yeah, that is thick glass. That's not regular glass. It's not cheap. I've been there many, many times, and that is not the first time that that has been the scene.
Let's continue this right after the top of the hour news. All right? 913-586-7798 if you want in. 913-586-7798. Dan Weinbaum has the news in less than 2 minutes. Here on Dana and Parks.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at KMBZ.com.